Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
A very good day to you, film fans. My name's Edith Bowman. This is Soundtrackin'. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode. We are coming at you thick and fast. That's because 'tis the season to be busy and full of great chats around film and music. And we lap it up and serve it to you on a giant, gorgeous platter. I'm not sure what I was trying to say with that, but basically, thanks so much for joining me. And we have another episode of wonderful conversation about film and music. I love this time of the year. I am literally flying around to various Q&As and recording episodes for you. And yeah, it's like Christmas comes early for me every year when we get into that period of award season. And I think this next film could well be part of that conversation. Our latest guests on Soundtrackin' are director John M. Chu and composer and lyricist Stephen Schwartz, who join me to discuss John's take on Stephen's classic stage show, Wicked. Set in the land of Oz, largely before Dorothy's arrival from Kansas, although there's an amazing little moment where you might spot her at the start of the film, it follows the story of Elphaba beginning her path to becoming the Wicked Witch of the West, and her unlikely friendship with her classmate Glinda, or should I say Galinda, who becomes Glinda the Good. Wicked features absolute knockout performances from Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande. I have to say that I had not seen the stage show before going in to watch this film and do this interview. What I was aware of was the phenomenal talents of so many of the cast, including Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo. However, I have to say that Cynthia's performance in this film is extraordinary. You feel her soul almost pour out of the screen with every note that she hits. Those moments of going in and out of songs are so delicate and just seamless. The relationship between the two of them is wonderful. Ariana's got just absolute knockout comedy chops on her. So I loved everything about this film. It's one of those films where I didn't know it or the story. Obviously, I know The Wizard of Oz, but I didn't know the story. And I also wasn't really that familiar with the songs. And I was so captivated by the songs. You know that point where sometimes a piece of music or a song or a lyric will kind of make you cry without you even realising that you're doing it. We'll begin our chat then with John and Stephen, with the pair of them, Cynthia and Ariana, singing What Is This Feeling?
What is the this feeling so sudden and new.
I felt the moment I laid eyes on you.
My pulse is rushing.
My head is reeling.
Yeah, well, my face is flushing. What is this feeling? Fervid as a flame. Does it have a name? Yeah. Loathing. Unadulterated loathing. For your face.
Your voice.
Your clothing. Let's just say I love it all.
I don't know where to begin, to be honest, but I guess I want to say by saying thank you. It's just the most beautiful gift to the world that, you know, the musical obviously has been this wonderful thing that we've all got something out of, but to elevate it and take it in the way that you have, it's just phenomenal. Congratulations to both of you.
Thank you. And I extend that thank you to Stephen Schwartz.
And I extend that thank you to John and
Drew. A big group
everybody
hug.
Knows. Everybody yeah. knows. It's, you know, it's genius.
The idea of this story as a film, you know, was around before the musical, you know, the idea of there being a... But what was the first conversation that you had about John coming on board yeah, and being yeah. the person that was going to take this forward and finally give us this film version?
Well, we had been talking for a long time about directors. And when we first started the conversation, I think John was in college or something like that. But I knew John a little bit because we briefly worked on a television show that didn't wind up happening. Mm-hmm. But I was very impressed with his musical sensibility and just his intelligence and imagination. And then I saw Crazy Rich Asians, and I thought, this is a guy with a fantastic visual sense and a fantastic sense of world building. I mean, he made Singapore look like Oz. And then when we were really coming down to, well, who do we want to ask first, we were able to get an advanced screening of In the Heights.
Yeah.
And then I saw how John worked with his brilliant choreographer, Christopher Scott, and really... From the very first moment that the music started in that movie and the cut to the feet on the street, and I was like, this is our guy. And then, you know, in tennis, they say, try to take the ball on the rise. Mm-hmm. I think we got John Chu on the rise. We were just lucky, you know, to get him at this stage in his career where he wanted to do these two yeah. movies with us and for us. And as we say in Wicked Land, we couldn't be happier.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the word kind of, you know, vision, because it was lovely hearing you talk about the first time that you'd seen the musical, which was before it hit Broadway, yeah. I believe. And you saw the film in your head when you were, you know, yeah. you could see it.
Absolutely.
You knew what you wanted to make even back then.
Yeah, I think I felt very privileged to have seen it before knowing anything. All I knew was it was a Stephen Schwartz new musical. So
yeah.
I was excited about that.
Yeah.
And sitting down, watching it, it blew my mind. I remember being swept away mm-hmm. as if watching E.T. the first time when I was a kid and the spaceship goes off into space. And yet it also brings you home.
Yeah.
Those two things are like the elements of cinema and of storytelling that I aspire to do.
Yeah.
And they were doing it on the stage right in front of my eyes. I was shocked.
I loved how you've said that it was really important for you to, you know, to do your research and to go way back to the origins of the, yeah. you know, way back to Bauman and mm-hmm. and kind of just bring yourself through that journey of these characters and this story. Why was yeah. that important to you? And what were the most important elements that you pulled out of that?
Yeah. Well, there's two parts. One, because of my own interactions with the Wizard of Oz world, with
yeah.
my parents as immigrants coming, being an all-American kid, that they wanted to infuse us with the American dream, the yellow brick road and the wizard that'll give you your heart's desire. So that was already bred in me.
Yeah.
But re-examining that story is a fascinating thing when you're 20 something years mm-hmm. old and trying to do that. And then my conversation with Stephen, I was very lucky to sit with him and Winnie Holtzman talking about the script and every line of every song in this musical, why he wrote it. And it was very clear that the importance of its origins in the L. Frank Baum's books
yeah.
were so important to understanding how to translate this. So that was a big influence. And the way he talks about Wizard of Oz and how it connects in all the ways, that was really important. I think what we took mostly in the movie was one, the thematics, of course,
yeah.
the political ideas that are inside of there, the personal ideas that are inside of there of what happens when the American dream is at its fullest and what do you do next. But also the designs from the Denslow drawings have a big influence on our movie. Those are all the things. But really it was knowing how much it meant to them too.
I watched a documentary yesterday about this Wicked, and it was amazing. It was so fulfilling to kind of hear the whole origin story of it. And you were sat at the piano and it's just glorious. And just for you as well, you know, when you were writing the musical, how important it was for you to have those connective tissues to those moments, to, you know, with that little, with the notes of Somewhere Over the Rainbow being, you know, incorporated into your creation. It's like, it's so beautifully poetic, but being so truthful to what inspired you from the story.
Yeah, well, in addition to the L. Frank Baum books, which we all read as kids, I don't know how it is over here. I mean, I know people know the 1939 movie, The Wizard of Oz. In America, it's like an American myth. We all know it by heart.
Yeah.
It was on television every year. Families would gather and watch it every single year. So, you know, I knew all the lines of the movie.
Yeah.
You can't really get through a day in America without hearing some reference on a television show, in a magazine article, in a newspaper headline to The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Somebody will say something like, I don't think we're in Kansas anymore, or there's no place like home, or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's that embedded in American culture. And so Winnie Hultzman and I, when we were working on Wicked, even though we were adapting Gregory Maguire's brilliant concept for a novel, we realized that we had to act as if the 1939 movie was a documentary. Like, that is what happened. And we can never contradict that. Whatever we do in our story, we can say this happened right before that, or while this was going on over here. But we can never, you should be able to cut Wicked and The Wizard of Oz together.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's different actors and different looks. But from a storytelling point of view, it should make sense.
Yeah. I don't know where to start with the music and the performances, and it's just, it's so rich with discussion and celebration. Your two leads, you know, Ariana and Cynthia, and what they do individually and together is like magic. It genuinely is. When you were thinking about the music and how you wanted to adapt it for the film, you know, both in terms of lyrically, if there were going to be changes, but also kind of musically and how that instrumentation would fit. How much of them fed into that, or was most of that already done before the casting was finalized?
Well, in terms of arrangements and orchestrations, to be honest, a lot of it had to do with Cynthia and Ariana. Frankly, the rest of the singers as well. Jonathan Bailey, who's just
so
knocks
good.
It out of the park. But particularly Cynthia and Ariana, because they're not just world-class singers. They're very, very smart musicians.
Yeah.
We worked on the vocal performances with just synth tracks, you know? And then the orchestration and the rhythm tracks that were created were influenced and to support that vocal performance also. You know, we could see what John had shot, how he was editing it together.
Yeah.
And so the orchestration and arrangements were meant to reflect what you were seeing on screen. So, yeah, I mean, the orchestra was done very, very late.
Yeah.
In order to support both their performances and John's vision.
In terms of when you realized what they could both bring to these roles, I mean, I think Ari just brings the comedy that she brings to this character. And, I mean, Cynthia's entire being is on that screen. It's just so beautiful.
Yeah.
It really, really is. For you, in terms of directing that and working with choreographer and with all your team, you know, all the collaborators that you've worked with, where does that conversation start? Is it with the two of them, you know, in terms of how they see these characters, how you see the characters, and finding that place in the middle with each other?
Yeah, it's sort of a combo. We have to create a little bit of the canvas for them to live into. But I think one of the first conversations that Nathan, our production designer, had, and Paul, and Alice, our cinematographer and costume designer, was in order for us to believe the stakes and believe the real emotions in this relationship, because it all came down to this relationship. They always said, it's the girls, stupid. No matter what you're doing, it's all about the girls. So that was our guiding light.
Yeah.
In order to believe those things, we had to establish that this was not a dream, actually. Like, this was a real place we were going to live in and we were going to root for. And that meant establishing the very beginning of the movie that this has landscape and this has creatures, it has history. And so that's what we had to sort of start to design first. What is Oz? It's like this old friend that we've known our whole lives but never have actually known. It's like our parents. And suddenly you hear the struggles and you're, wow, you're a rock star, like teenager. You were like a rebel. And so where were the animals before the wizard came in? Where was the grimoire? What was the prophecy? Where were people at? And what did he impose on the society? And what is it that when you land Ariana and Cynthia in this as Elphaba and Glinda, where they sit and how do they rub against the things that have happened here? So that just allowed them to then play this out, and they came exposed, their wounds exposed from our world. I mean, they're the child of two worlds because they come into here, and I think we recognize those wounds when she says something has changed within me, something's not the same. I think that is deeply embedded in us for some reason after the pandemic or where we're at. We feel very uneasy right now, and I think that's our connective tissue into Oz, our tornado. And then they continued to unravel that. And they were changing in their lives during this movie, making this movie. I was changing. I just had kids. So we're all changing and we're trying to every day be as present as possible to unveil that using, of course, the prophetic words and music of this brilliant man. And it just realized, like, he knew it all along. They've gone through this already. We have gone through this. And so I think that where we connect those things is where the movie meets. And if we got it at the right time and if we captured it and edited it without ruining it, then we would expose that to also an audience that I think feels the same thing, which is the power of cinema.
Absolutely. It's exactly what cinema was made for.
Exactly.
It's exactly what it was made for. I mean, the choreography as well was just... It's so... You feel like in your seat, you want to be in those scenes. You want to be kind of, you know... going around in the rotations and you want to be flying with it's so immersive the way that the choreography is. It's so beautiful to watch, but you kind of almost are in your seat trying to kind of, you know, sort of kind of dance along in a way. What were the conversations you know, about how you navigated that, and also knowing that your leads were so willing to kind of just throw themselves into it physically as well?
Well, Christopher Scott, who is our choreographer, I've worked, and we have a team that works with him, and he figures things out. But for us, it was that's why I love him, because he doesn't just listen to the music that we hear; he hears the beats within the beats of the thing. Like he finds. He is inspired by music. He's not imposing himself on top of the music. He loves to have music sort of guide him in a weird way within it. And so he would come in with what the music is feeling like. And I would come in with where we are in the story and what does that mean to our story, dancing through life. Okay, how do they move in Shiz before Fiero drops in? And what does Fiero do? Oh, he loosens their joints up. Okay. And we have these circular ideas throughout Shiz. And then Elphaba's going to come in and create these jagged lines and these cracks and all of that. And so how does movement reflect that? And then you have Cynthia and Ari. And so we set up sort of a language.
Yeah.
That's sort of like a temporary language. And what I love about our team is nobody's precious. Like, I think to make this right, we all had to build things and know that we could change it and then walk into it. And as we're walking into it, trust each other that we could call each other out and find the right fit. And nobody was precious to hold on to something that he just wanted to put in, that we were going to go into the fire together. And so I think that was when we got Cynthia and Ari was, okay, their music style is shifting and changing according to, oh, I'm Not That Girl is slower than what we thought from before. Wizard and I has ebbs and flows the way it never had before. Okay, so then that means the movement may change. Oh, we're not using that set at all. Trash that set. We're going to a totally different place.
Wow.
So it's that kind of, even though it was a giant movie, we had to make it feel like we were making a little independent movie. And I think that was the key. But that takes trust amongst all the different players and no giant ego ramming something through. Otherwise, it wouldn't work.
Well, you see that in those kind of like, whether it's Popular or Gravity, you know, the kind of how they both kind of lean into each character, it really allows that sort of complete physical sort of performance in a way, you know.
And they had it. Ari's, you forget, oh my gosh, Ari's done tours, world tours doing all this stuff because she doesn't wear that on her sleeve like out there. You're like, oh yeah, she has muscle memory. Like, and same with Cynthia. She sells out the Walt Disney Concert Hall and like they know those presents. So they can pull that card at any time. But they're so willing to learn and they're willing to be vulnerable in other areas that I think that combo is... You have so many weapons.
Seeing a little bit behind the scenes of the filming of Cynthia with Defying Gravity is just with the harnesses and how, I mean, wow.
Yeah. And she wanted to do that. She wanted
did you know that she, I mean, you must have had like a kind of plan B, you know, the kind of this, the double and the, you know, ready to kind of
Yes, but we have the double ready to go. We have the pre-records ready to go. I'm like, we're throwing wind at you. We're spinning you. You're going to be dizzy. Like we'll give you all the outs. And I give her all the way, even though she said she wanted to do it herself. She trained for a year to do all that. Even on the day I was ready to, like, she won't really do that when she realizes how. No, she was like, she refused. She said, I cannot play this role if I do not execute what I know I can execute. And I don't even understand what she had to find where her air lies in the strap of the thing. And she doesn't have a floor to use. So I don't even.
Nothing to
kind how of she hits those notes with no diaphragm to support it because it's all, you know, trussed in.
Upside down. And
those two ladies are so game. They'll just try anything. Mm. You know, I love what John says about we all sort of went in together and nobody was precious about anything. It was hard for me and Winnie to believe how collaborative this was. And a lot of that is this man. I mean, he's definitely our leader, but he's not a dictator. Well, if he is a dictator, he's a dictator who listens. So we always felt heard and we always felt part of the team. And I know that doesn't always happen for if you've written something and it's being adapted. So aside from my gratitude towards John, it was just so much fun.
So much fun. I mean, she's whipping around and we have grips that are crying in the corner. Because again, and when you do it live, you don't have it playing on the big speakers. It's just her voice. Yeah. So it's echoing through this empty warehouse. And it is extraordinary to see that. She's one of a kind.
Yeah, she absolutely is.
It's time to trust my instincts. Close my eyes and leap. It's time to try defying gravity. I think I'll try defying gravity, and you can't pull me down. Having delusions of grandeur. I'm through accepting limits, 'cause someone says they're so. Some things I cannot change, but till I try, I'll never know. Too long I've been afraid of losing love, I guess I've lost. Well, if that's love, it comes at much too high a cost. I'd sooner
I remember speaking to our old flatmate, James McCardle, this wonderful actor. And James told me this brilliant story about how she used to sing him to sleep at night when he would suffer from insomnia.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine having Cynthia and Reba as your kind of like bedtime story singer? Yeah, totally.
Yeah, she left a voicemail saying happy birthday to me the other day. And you're just like, this is the most beautiful version. I saw this, put this on Spotify, like right now.
What is it like, Stephen, in terms of, you know, you've lived this world for so long. It's been part of your world for so long. And to have John come and you know, like you said, adapt it into his vision and his interpretation and emotional connection to the story and these characters. Can you allow yourself a moment to just sort of step out to watch it? Or can you not do that to have a kind of experience as a fan or, you know?
Well, I had a few moments where I felt that of actually seeing what it was, but before the movie was completed, because John was showing Winnie and me rough cuts and versions of the editing to hear what we thought about it, but also to write the music for what was there. I do want to, before I answer your question, give a lot of a shout out and credit to my co-score, writer John Powell. I don't want him to sort of be forgotten in this because he was such a major contributor and such a generous collaborator with me. But yes, like the first time I actually saw, even in its rough cut and even with pieces that were just, you know, sketched in that were eventually going to be the movie, the first time I saw Defying Gravity, I remember I called my family and friends and I said, I don't know about the rest of the movie, but the last 10 minutes are amazing. And then the first time I saw how John and his editor Myron figured out to open the movie, which was something that they concocted that wasn't actually in the screenplay.
Yeah.
And Winnie and I saw it together, and we just cheered in the little screening room because we were so happy with what they'd come up with. So there have been moments all the way through where I suddenly saw what John and his team were doing, and it was just so thrilling.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about John Powell and working with John Powell and kind of how those roles kind of worked across the production.
I knew John from way, way back when, from the original animated feature of Prince of Egypt.
Oh, wow.
Because he was part of Hans Zimmer's team on that. And he and I got to know each other, and he did some of the orchestration for that. And we just hit it off. So when we were looking for someone to collaborate on the score, someone who really knows how to do an action sequence, who really knows how to set up just atmosphere in a scene, a feeling of tension or a feeling of longing, I immediately thought of John. And fortunately, although he's the busiest person in the world in terms of all the things he scores, he was able to do it. But we talked a great deal. We spent a lot of time going through thematic material and musical motifs, and what does this theme mean, and what does that theme convey? And then he wove it into the parts of the score that he wrote. So I feel it's so seamless.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, even I don't remember anymore. Did he write that? Did I write that? And that has a lot to do with not just his musical brilliance, but his generosity of spirit.
Yeah. Collaboration.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
And unraveling those themes was a discovery for me. We already shot the movie. And so to hear these themes emerge, and even there were takes on those themes, to me was like another whole nother character that we could layer on top of this movie or counter what's happening in the scene. And that was really fascinating to go through, actually.
Yeah.
Mike's probably just didn't pick up. I think Artie was just walking past outside, giving us some of her soprano.
Yes, I heard that.
Oh, so great. But even that side of it, you know, for her to kind of, to dive into that world of teach it, of learning to you know, as a hugely successful singer, but to kind of go, no, I need this addition to what I can already do to really fulfill this part to achieve it.
Yeah, and I wasn't even there for some of those parts because I knew Stephen has trained so many Galindas and Elphabas, and I really wanted them to go through Wicked School first, before I ever stepped into it.
Can we all sign up for that?
Yeah. I had gone through 6 months of Zoom Wicked School, so I wanted these girls to like go play.
Yeah.
And so there are discoveries that happened that I didn't even know
Amazing.
When they happened or how they happened.
Yeah. Again, I mean, we keep using the word collaboration.
Yeah.
Which I do think maybe is unusual for a movie on this scale. But again, working with Ari and Cynthia, they were so collaborative. They would try this riff and try something there, and then we would listen together and select, okay, we're going to do this one, but we're not going to do that one. I mean, Ari came in with a soprano. She has it.
Yeah.
She just never showed it before. She never used it. But, and I don't know, maybe she went and worked with the vocal coach. I have no idea.
Yeah.
All I know is from day one, she came in and just sang and had those notes.
What goes on in Wicked School then? Are we around the piano? Are we, what's, yeah.
Yeah, we sit at the piano and we sing together, or they sing, and then we talk about it and they try things and we make discoveries together.
Oh, yeah. I love that. So great. I also have to mention the Show Chicken Band.
Yes.
I really love that little nod.
Yes.
That's, yeah.
L. Frank Baum, before he wrote Wizard of Oz, he used to raise, breed, and sell these show chickens. And so we wanted those little nods. And we have a lot of little breadcrumbs throughout. But that was really nice.
When do you do that? Is that at script stage or is that a kind of storyboard planning stage where you're thinking it'd be really nice to kind of to sprinkle a little bit of, you know, in there? At what point are you thinking about that? And
well, that was what I learned in Wicked School, is like there were breadcrumbs all over the place already.
It's like Hansel
so I was like,
Gretel.
Oh, if I'm a part of this family, then I got to do my own ones. And I remember seeing like how crazy of a story that was that he did that. And then we were trying to figure out what animals exist in Oz. And you have to have, you know, they have to start designing these animals.
Yeah.
And I wanted really only animals that were either mentioned in the Wizard of Oz books or had some sort of connection.
Yeah.
And so that was... that was one of them. I was like, oh, we got to have these chickens. And what if they're playing the piano and they have feed all over these? But it's not a piano. It's an Aussian piano. And everything always had to be a little bit out of this world, not exactly of this world.
And I love as well the adaption of the performances for each, excuse me, individual and their their character, but also their abilities as well. You know, it's like Michelle's like, I can't sing. But the way that you've got her to perform that is just, it's so emotional. It's so touching and feels like she's singing right to you.
She does. She first of all, she told John that she couldn't sing. Yeah. Then she came into the recording studio 2 days after she just won an Academy Award as Best Actress. And then she flies to London, comes into the recording studio, again, so game, says, I can't sing, but I'm going to try. And then she sang. And we didn't fake anything with Michelle. Mm. I mean, that is her singing. We didn't bring someone in to sing extra notes, as I've sometimes done with some people, you know, in an animated feature. We didn't really tune her very much.
Yeah.
Basically, I mean, we obviously did some rehearsing and we did a few takes, but she sang. I saw her last night and I said, you told me you couldn't sing, but I hope you know now that you can. And I was so tickled at the premiere last night because after the little section that she sings, she got a hand. For her singing, yeah. I was so happy about that.
Miss Elphaba. Many years I have waited for a gift like yours to appear. Why, I predict the wizard might make you his magic grand vizier. My dear, I'll write at once to the wizard. Tell him of you in advance. With a talent like yours, dear, there is a definite chance. If you work as you should, you'll be making good. Welcome to Shiz.
And Jeff as well, you know, it's kind of like just the personality that he brings into that performance as well. Jonathan's really interesting because I love the fact that this character it's almost a character playing a character in a way within absolutely. You know, in terms of he's putting on this thing. It's not really him, but that, you know, the character's putting on this thing. So like, and that's really interesting because when you see him with Cynthia, you kind of get little cracks and points of that. Absolutely. But for that performance to hold that back, but to then to kind of just give little, that's a really nuanced performance, isn't it?
And I think that he helped me see something that really cracked the movie for me.
Yeah.
In terms of our movie, of that at some point, everybody has to wake up from this dream. At some point, everybody asks the first real question about the story they're living in. In a weird way, it's almost Pleasantville. And you've always said, like, when you look at Fiora auditions, you always look at this one line when she says, you wouldn't be so unhappy.
Yes, exactly. That's a lot about how we cast that role, because he's coming in being this party boy.
Yeah.
And then it is, I don't want to do too many spoilers, but at a certain point, Elphaba says something to him that shows that she actually sees him inside, and he doesn't have a line. He doesn't respond. You know, in fact, after a moment, he brushes it off because he's not ready to face it yet.
Yeah.
But that is the telling moment for us when we're trying to cast the various Fieros, is how does the actor respond when he hears her say that?
Yeah. And Johnny, that moment, we get a close-up where we can actually watch his little brain break. It's almost like he freezes in time and you see him processing it. And from then on, he's not the same. And I think we were like, oh, if that hasn't happened to him, that has to happen to every character. Even Elphaba, her break is at some point, but she's breaking other people's reality too. Yeah. And to me, that was...
The dance is just... Yeah. Oh, God, I'm going to start crying just thinking about it. So, so, so powerful. I've been really cautious about no spoilers in our chat as well. But I'm going to leave you by just saying I very much hope we have some more from you guys. At some point in the future.
We got a whole nother part two.
I don't know whether I could say or not. I was like, oh my God, people hopefully have seen it. So when? Do we know?
Next year.
Next year. We shot it already.
This time next year, we'll be talking
to you
about
back here, same time, same place.
Two. Absolutely.
Yes. I can't wait.
No, we're working on it already.
Oh, man. I'm going to have watched it at least like 25 times between now and next year with all my family and all my friends. I can't wait. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you.
And congratulations. Thank you so much.
I am a sentimental man who always longed to be a father. That's why I do the best I can to treat each citizen of Oz as son or daughter. So, Elphaba, I'd like to raise you high, 'cause I think everyone deserves the chance to fly. And helping you with your ascent allows me to feel so parental.
From Wicked, that sentimental man performed by Jeff Goldblum, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with John M. Chu and Stephen Schwartz. As discussed, Cynthia is magnificent in this film. And I've been lucky that she has been a guest on Soundtracking. So here she is, talking about singing lullabies to her friends on this very podcast.
I've been singing since I was five.
Have you?
Yeah, but I don't know that I realised what it was until I was maybe 11, 12, mm-hmm. when I realised that I could move people. And so that is the thing, because the thing that kept me going is knowing that it made people happy.
Yeah.
So that's what it's been about, really, mm-hmm. trying to make people smile, making people happy.
Yeah.
A friend of mine used to call me when he couldn't sleep and I would sing him lullabies to sleep.
Oh my God, yeah, that's yeah. gorgeous.
And so I just, if anyone calls and says, oh, I can't sleep, can you? then that's what I do, yeah.
Have you got a go-to lullaby?
I just sing whatever song they like. So if I do...
Why are you like a sleep jukebox?
I guess so. And you know, that's not a bad thing to like
so
do.
Nice.
And it helps, you know what I mean? Because it's the one thing that sort of like lulls everyone and
yeah.
like calms people down. And, you know,
that's
I find
beautiful.
Whatever's like easy at the time, and just do it. I used to do it when I was in drama school. His name, I don't know if James McArdle, his name is.
Uh-huh.
He used to call me up and he'd be like...
Scottish actor?
Yeah.
Yeah, I spoke to him last week. Oh, you know... No.
Yeah, I went to Rada together, same year.
Oh, wow. I met him for the first time last week at the Mary Queen of Scots premiere. And I saw him in Angels in America.
I love him.
Whoa.
I love him so much. We went to drama school at the same time, same year, same class. And occasionally I would sing him to sleep.
That's gorgeous.
Cynthia Erivo, back in episode 121 in a special, which also featured Letitia Wright and Jesse Buckley.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle.
With ultra titanium alloy metal.
You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
My huge thanks to John and Stephen for taking the time to talk to us. Wicked is on general release now and I absolutely loved it. And fingers crossed, we're hoping to get some time with Cynthia in December. Head to edithbowman.com to hear every single episode of the podcast, including my chat with Jeff about Chaos, which has sadly not been recommissioned by Netflix for a second season. Boo to that. You can also listen back to that episode with Cynthia back on episode 121. Follow us on your socials at Soundtracking UK, and please do subscribe to our YouTube channel too, which is called Soundtracking Extra. We put loads of content up there, whether it be the visual versions of the podcast, so you can watch everybody, or there's loads of exclusive content up there as well. Next up on the podcast, delighted to welcome back. In fact, they've been on the podcast before, but individually, but we have them together this time. Edward Berger, director and writer, and Volker Bertelmann, the composer. They join me to discuss Conclave. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.
I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.